Welcome to Ghost Biz. You're on the Business Report. I'm Gary Struble. I chat to the finance ghost every week. Thank you for listening and for making us Namibia's most listened to podcast. You can get that wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Android, or Spotify. That's the Business Report. Go ahead and subscribe. We're trying our best to bring you the latest up-to-date information. Ghost, welcome back to the show. Now, let's start out with something called a Mac. It's not a burger. It's a material adverse change. And what we've seen is Anglo-American giving up on a potential sale of a mine to a company called Peabody. Tell us about a Mac and tell us how that affects Anglo-American.
Hi, Gary. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with McDonald's, Big Mac or otherwise. It's also got nothing to do with that old school Son. What was it? Return of the Mac, I think. But what it does have to do with is buyers of assets trying to wriggle out of deals. So a MAC stands for Material Adverse Change Clause. And it's actually a really important tool in deal making. So because it takes so long for large transactions to be finalized, you can end up with literally months, sometimes even years, between the parties actually agreeing to do a transaction and the terms on which they agree, and then the final implementation date of the deal. Now, obviously, things can go wrong in that time period. So if something really bad happens, something material, as per the M in MAC, then you can end up in a situation where the buyer of the asset actually doesn't want it anymore. Imagine if you've agreed to buy someone's car and you're only going to get it in a year's time and they're going to drive the car in the meantime. If something really bad happens with the car in that time, then you wouldn't want to go ahead with the deal anymore, would you? So it's no different to that in principle. And what happened with Anglo American is they are trying to sell their steelmaking coal asset to a group called Peabody Energy. And Peabody originally agreed to the deal. And then earlier this year, there was an underground fire at one of the mines in that steelmaking coal business. And Peabody Energy used that as an excuse to invoke the MAC clause and to say, thank you very much, but no, thank you. We are out of the deal. Now, Anglo's argued hard to say, yes, sure, it was a thing, but it wasn't material. It wasn't so bad. The damage was light. And this is where it becomes legally quite complex. The best MAC clauses are very precise, so they'll often say something like, if earnings drop by a certain percent. But if they are vague, then it gives the buyer of the asset more wriggle room to argue and say, oh yes, this is a material adverse change, hence I'm out. So Anglo could have gone down a road of trying to force the deal, and it would have been very long and expensive to do that. Instead, they've just said, look, you know, we're going to walk away from this one. They have reserved their legal rights and they are probably going to pursue damages through an arbitration process, but they're not going to try and force Peabody Energy to actually take the asset here. Another point that's maybe just worth finishing off on there is that I think if the coal sector was in a better space right now, Peabody would have probably glossed over this issue and said, sure, we'll take the asset. But because coal has had a pretty tough year, this actually gave them an escape route and it's one that they've taken.
One of the things we have seen, specifically in a Southern African context, is the development of shopping centers and shopping malls over the last 20 years. Not only as, really good ways for retailers to reach pockets of customers, but also fantastic investment vehicles when they're done right. We're still seeing some pockets of growth in South Africa, and this is, we're seeing some interest in township adjacent and commuter focused retail properties. So, perhaps not your sense in city. In this case, Dipula Properties are buying Protea Gardens Mall in Soweto for 478 million rand. Tell us how exciting this particular transaction is and what it tells us about the changing consumer patterns in Southern African markets.
Yeah, so the reason you're seeing that growth in the space is because basically what you're getting is you're getting people who are coming from the informal economy. So literally your spaza shops in townships into the formal economy. So buying their groceries, for example, at Usave or Boxer, or even Pick and Pay or ShopRite for that matter. Buying their health and beauty products, perhaps from Clicks, for example, or Dis-Chem, as opposed to, again, a small general store in the actual township. So it's a slow and steady process, but as more and more people are starting to come through the ranks, starting to get themselves out of poverty and into at least a sort of low income bracket where they are able to just buy the basics, it's actually very lucrative for retailers. There's a lot of focus on this. I mean, all you have to do is look at the growth in a group like Boxer. That's exactly what their business is built around. Now you go one level up the value chain to the property owners, to the landlords, they need to have space for the likes of Boxer to occupy. And that, of course, is creating the opportunity then for these township adjacent and commuter properties. And basically all that means is stuff, you know, either within walking distance of where people live or near taxi ranks, for example, train stations, public transport, all that kind of thing in South Africa. And there are very, very large and very valuable properties in that space. And there are property funds that are focusing their efforts in this area. It is relatively specialist property, and obviously they have to contend with a lot of risks around security, etc. But at the end of the day, they actually got really high quality tenants. So I think at this particular mall in Soweto, the stat was that I think 70% of the tenants are national tenants. So that's large retail chain stores. I mean, that means you're collecting your rent from the likes of, you know, Clicks and the big grocery stores and all the fashion houses that everyone knows. So nothing wrong with doing that, that's for sure. And these assets are actually trading or changing hands for quite meaty prices because of the growth involved in there as well. So I did the maths around the yield that Tapula is paying on this property. It's actually quite difficult because the disclosure is not great. For some reason, they give forecast earnings rather than current earnings from the property. So you have to go and make some assumptions to bring it back to today's numbers and express it as a 2025 number. But it works out that they've bought it on a net operating income yield of roughly 9.5%, which is a pretty full price for an asset like that. Once you actually take off the cost of the debt, it looks as though the net yield they get from that property might be below where the fund is currently trading on the market. So that means they've actually paid quite a price for it. But to be fair, it's a pretty big, iconic property in the heart of Soweto. So that's a good asset to own within this theme. Tapula is doing other stuff as well. They've actually bought a handful of other assets, a couple of big logistical clays in Joburg near the airport, one or two other properties as well. So the fund has been very busy, and they've kind of hinted that they might need to issue some shares for cash to actually finalize all of these deals. So keep an eye on that. I think there's a pretty good chance that we could see some kind of book build process from Tapula, but at this point in time, nothing guaranteed.
Turn our attention to banking now, and the South African banking giants who also operates here in Namibia, one of them being Nedbank, tend to have a far more South African focused or Southern African focused than a lot of the other banking groups. Standard Bank, for example, only 50% of their business sitting in South Africa. Nedbank, however, have recently bought Ikoka. That was for 1.6 billion rand. And now it looks like they're selling 21% shareholding in an African banking group called Ecobank. What does that tell us about Nedbank's strategy? And tell us a little bit about these two transactions.
Yeah, so as you say, Nedbank much more focused on South Africa than the likes of Standard Bank, which is not to say that Standard Bank doesn't pay attention here and doesn't compete effectively, because clearly they do. It just means that the group exposure is a bit different in that Standard Bank also has extensive interests elsewhere. And as you quite correctly point out, they generate roughly half their earnings from South Africa. Nedbank doesn't have such large operations elsewhere. And in fact, they tried to almost put a band-aid on their lack of African exposure by doing this deal way back when. I actually can't remember the exact year, but it's at least 10 years or more with Ecobank, which was basically a deal to say, okay, cool, we'll take, it was roughly a 20% stake at the time in Ecobank. And, you know, we'll try work together a little bit with these people and see what we can do in terms of cross-selling with clients. The reality is, unless you actually control both assets, it's really difficult to extract meaningful value from a deal like that. So Nedbank's Africa strategy has always been a little bit half pregnant. You know, you can't just go and own a significant minority stake in a bank somewhere else and say, okay, cool, well, there we have it. You know, we have an Africa strategy. To be fair to them, now under new management as well, this is one of the changes that they've decided to make, is to say, right, we're going to let this thing go. Goodbye, Ecobank. They're unlocking, it's about 1.8 billion rand in the process. And as you've correctly pointed out again, they are acquiring Ikoka in South Africa, which is basically an SME-focused payments and lending business, essentially. So what they are doing is they are saying, we're going to free up capital by selling off this Ecobank stake that no one in the market really gives any credit to at the end of the day. And we're going to go and acquire something in South Africa, and we're going to hope to grow it. So from that perspective, I think probably a good strategy and sends a good message to the market. But I can only laugh, because what didn't send a great message to the market, and I do always look at director dealings, is literally within a day or two after the announcement of the Ikoka deal, the managing executive of the cluster at Nedbank that will have Ikorka in it, basically, alongside a whole bunch of other things, sold shares in Nedbank. Now, there's lots of reasons why directors sell shares. You know, they might be buying a new house, they might want to diversify, whatever the case may be. But it still doesn't send a great message, right? They've announced this big deal. It's all very exciting. It's a growth play. And then the executive who needs to make it happen sells shares. Not a great look.
All right, guys, thank you. We'll leave it at that today. Remember, you can pick up this episode and all your previous episodes wherever you grab your podcasts. We'll be chatting to the Finance Ghost again next week in Ghost Biz.